Welcome to today's episode of CLCI Live, brought to you by the award-winning and ICF-accredited school, Certified Life Coach Institute. Sit back, relax, and enjoy today's episode.
Hello, welcome to Tuesday.
Hi, everybody.
How you doing?
Howdy.
You just turned into Woody? Is that Woody?
No, that's the pig.
Is it the pig?
It's a dinosaur.
It's a shark.
Howdy.
He's wearing his hat and he goes, howdy. Yeah, that's what it is. Okay, sorry. Now that we've found the source of that.
Major digression.
Yes, okay. All right. Hi, guys. Before we start this wonderful discussion, I just want to make sure that those of you out there watching know that we are monitoring the chat. And so if you have questions while we are sharing, please drop them in the chat and we'll do our best to answer them. And also, while we are streaming, don't forget to like, subscribe, all of that good stuff. And that's all for me in that intro space. Hey, Misha made it!
Hey!
Sorry I'm late. Hello, everybody.
Welcome. And now we're going to talk about something I have, I'm not sure how I feel about it, one way or the other.
But either way.
What is our topic, guys?
Emotions 101, mixed emotions
or feelings.
Mixed feelings are emotions, right?
Yeah,
I would say so. I think that's a fair,
yeah.
I'm sure there's somebody out there screaming no, but
I mean, I could probably make an argument, but I'm too lazy to be
emotion.
You know what is so funny, and this is a lesson for me, like it's and I'm not sure that this is going to be flattering or good necessarily, but I'm sharing it anyways. I thought ambivalence meant something completely different.
So did I.
I did too. Did you see what I put all that in there? I was like, I've been using it wrong.
Yes,
my whole life, right?
I was embarrassed. Yeah.
Have you been mixing it up with ambiversion?
No.
Well, indifferent, I think is,
indifferent. Like, yeah. Ambivalence just meant, like, I don't care. But that's really not what ambivalence means. It's more like your emotions are mixed. Mm-hmm. I always thought it was like, meh, whatever. Like, I,
right. Yeah.
I could go this way, I could go that way. I'm not really attached.
I'm ignoring it.
Yeah.
Apathetic. It's more complex. Yeah. It's more of a complex thing. Yeah. I thought that was really kind of a neat lesson to learn.
Mm-hmm.
That is what we're talking about. There's another way of saying mixed emotion. Ambivalence is another way to say mixed emotions. So we've done a lot of research in all of this, and I have mixed emotions. So if you need someone to coach, I've got my mixed emotions. They're all mixed up in me at the moment. So happy to share. But before we get there, what did we learn along our way? How do we feel about mixed emotions?
If you have mixed emotions, you're seen as indecisive. Other people don't like it so much.
There's a weird kind of paradox, right? There's a few paradoxes in this space that happen where in certain situations, if we come in and we seem wishy-washy, right? Wishy-washy, like we're going to fluctuate. All of a sudden, people don't trust us. Like they're like, oh, that she didn't know what she wants. I'm not going to go with her. I'm not going to follow. I'm not going to listen to her. She got no clue. But we're willing to follow somebody blindly into the craziness if they are adamant, which might not be good. It might actually be a very dangerous thing, right? When in truth, the ambivalent person might actually be in a much safer place. So to be a much more sound state of mind.
Maybe not sound, but more common state of mind than people let on.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think that one of the things shared in this is that it's more of a realistic place to be in. And when we find ourselves ambivalent, we're more we're less biased.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if we are adamant about something, I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, factual things that the earth revolves around the sun. I can be adamant about that. That's fair. Right. But if there was a time there were people argued, so, but if, you know, we're in a space where of unknown, if I have an ambivalent attitude, I'm much more less likely to be biased. I'm much less likely to, I'm more open to other possibilities, right?
Mm-hmm. So I have a question, because yeah. I want to clarify, like, if we're talking about mixed emotions, I'm looking at it from two different standpoints. I'm looking at it, I'm coaching. I have a client that comes into my office and they're ambivalent. They have mixed emotions. They don't, their common answer might be, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Because they don't know where to kind of streamline their feelings and their thoughts. And, or they could be all the way over here or all the way over here. And so, whoa, Jerome just disappeared. I'm sorry.
I'll be back. I promise.
And then I'm thinking hey, he's back. That's exciting. So then I'm thinking also me as a coach or even a facilitator, people see me with lots of different kinds of emotions. And sometimes I'm really happy and I'm excited and I'm giggly. And some people might perceive that as being immature. And other people see me as excited and like, oh yeah, here comes the joy. And then I walk in and I'm kind of like, just kind of quiet. That doesn't mean anything's wrong. So I think as coaches and also as a client, kind of identifying, you know, what is the role of these emotions? And when they're mixed, what do we do with them?
Mm-hmm. I think those are some great questions. I'm going to venture to say that we don't know until the client says, I want to roll this out and make a decision, or I want to weigh both sides, you know, and see where the experimentation is. With what they uncover. As a facilitator, we could speak into it should it come up. We can always speak into what that experience is. That's my first inclination. If something is off the wall kind of behavior, I don't want to say off the wall behavior, like what you spoke about being fun and vivacious in one moment and then another time you've come in and are in a thoughtful place, that doesn't mean that anything's impacting you or you're sad. It's just a different perspective of whatever it is you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. I'm feeling.
It's just a sharing, an open up. Mm-hmm. So I think
also,
those are three. Yeah.
It also might be a decoupling from the idea of confusion and ambivalence, mm-hmm. because you could feel two contradicting things about something, but you kind of know what to do. I feel contradictory at times about my fitness journey, but I know what I'm still going to do despite that. So there's not
that
really
is
what ambivalence is when it's all mixed up. This is what I thought about. I don't know if it was in the reading or something, but I think of it as like making a cocktail. Like you have your constituent parts, but they combine to make one thing that stands by itself.
Well, I mean,
so if I want to make a dark and stormy, I got my ginger beer, I got my rum mixed together. It's this new thing that
I have weekly mixed emotions regarding my personal training. Like, you guys are subject to this. Poor Jen and Lisa are subject. They are my coaches in this space because I, on some level, hate it. Like on some level, I really don't like so many things about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on another level, I like parts. There are things that come out of it that I enjoy. There are moments in it I enjoy. I've also made a commitment, so I'm going to see it through. And there's something in me that's very important. And so it's this constant sort of back and forth in me that goes on all the way until I show up. Literally, like, and even sometimes today, like today, when I showed up, I was still a little, but I'm doing this anyways. And it's just an interesting fight that goes on inside me, I guess, like this back and forth. But I keep doing it. I know it's best. I know I've committed. I might quit one day. I don't know. but right now I'm not going to.
So
and it's just, this very complicated feeling mishmash of emotions in me.
But when you talk about sort of like a fight, that brings to mind like there are two separate things that are contesting. They're not really they're mixed in the same way that too. Like but that's what I want to ask, because it sounds like they're mixing as well as water and oil mixed together.
But they are mixed. But they are mixing too, because.
Do they combine to something then?
If it's arm day, I'm probably going to be more happy to like combine. If it's leg day, I'm probably going to be more oil and water, right? So, but there's also more that goes into it. So if we're sharing, it's very black and white thinking to think that I either do or I don't want to do it. But truthfully, if we do the deeper dive into it, well, why do I like it? Why do I go? Why am I in this situation? Well, I know that it's good for my body. I know that doing that kind of workout is it's cross training. It will build muscle. It's going to net in results physically that I'm going to appreciate in the long run. I also get to hang out with one of a good friend that I absolutely enjoy, and it's like our us time. And so, and we cheerlead each other on. And I really enjoy that. I also really like when it's arm day, because I get to shine in arm day. I'm good in arm day. But then what comes along leg day, where the insecure, broken, bad knee, chubby chick comes out, right? And I get nervous and I get scared, and I worry about my knee, and I get into this, I have to protect myself, and it's hard. It's not as easy. Arm day is pretty easy. I can have my hard moments, but I'm going to make it through. My form is going to be solid. But so there's all these complex things that go on inside me, right? All of them. And it was just, it's a mix of emotions. Right? It is totally a mix of emotions, of both parts I enjoy and parts I deeply, deeply don't necessarily enjoy or don't. I have weird emotions about, I have weird feelings, but it's also a test of my character, which is what I'm trying to like kind of reframe, I guess, a bit. Is like, okay, how can I go into this and be a learner, let go of that ego, let go. I mean, I think I'm gonna grow as a human being from this experience. At least I hope I will.
I mean, I think this is really important. I mean, I used to have a podcast, and it was the coexistence, joy, pain, and truth, right? And the idea is that it all exists, it's all here, and it has to be here. We don't really end up experiencing joy if we haven't had pain. We don't actually understand pain unless we've had really great joy. When things shift and change and kind of, so I think what you're talking about is really important, Brooke, is like how to embrace all of it.
Yeah, because it's all there, right? It all, I think of also these moments in my life where I had, after my divorce, I had just a really kind of downhill period where I was trying to just really figure life out and do a lot of things. And then I feel like I lost a lot of myself coming out of that. And I almost had to figure out who I was again after a lot of series of events, a lot of things happened. And I remember feeling something would click into place. Like something I remember when I bought my first like really awesome computer, and I got my screens and I had my whole setup again. And I used to have a setup, and it clicked into place, and I was so happy. But I had this feeling of also, how did I ever lose that, right? How did I let some part of myself go for a while? And it was this bittersweet moment. And I noticed as I was, little things like that would click as I was dealing with my PTSD, and I started to go out and hang out with people and have a great night and make friends again. I would then have a moment of this feeling of, oh man, how did I lose that part of? And it was just this bit of sadness would mingle in, right? I'm now since very grateful for that, because I think from that I have an appreciation that I didn't have before for what I have. Like I have a next level of like this knowing that I don't take things as for granted as I once did. And I think this comes from the having those mixed emotions.
Well, so, a perfect example, I just was thinking of this. You know, we teach these classes, right? The 101, and we have people who are coming in super excited, and there's a lot of information, and then all of a sudden they're terrified. What am I doing? Where am I going to go with this? How am I going to do it? Right? But then they're still super excited at the end of the weekend. I'm like, woohoo, I did it. So it's like, but it's an ongoing, like both of those feelings are simultaneous the whole weekend. Like it's almost like they're on a boat and it's teetering this way and teetering in that way. But they're sharing these emotions all weekend long.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
So are we talking about holding space for two conflicting emotions? Is that what we're talking about?
It may not even be two. It could be several. It could be a lot of different emotions and how we as people house them, right? We can have all these things going on inside us and sometimes not be able to make heads or tails of it. Or, and I think that's what you brought up, Misha, when you said we have a client that comes in and says, I don't know. When you ask them, well, how do you feel about it? I don't know. Well, I would hazard a guess that that means there's a lot going on in there, right? Mm-hmm. That they haven't explored. They haven't put words to.
Yeah.
And so that's why that question as a coach, well, tell me more about what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
comes in really handy, right? Because then we can start to unpack all of those bits of mixed emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's really cool about that client that's saying, I don't know, is that they're going to be a lot more flexible and open to exploring where to go next and what the next step is. Because they're not going to have this is what I need right now, very specific. There's going to be a lot more, I guess, freedom to explore with that client, I would guess, because they don't know. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a gift as a coach. A lot of coaches dread the I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think it's a gift.
Yeah.
With the sort of mixing of emotions, there seems to be sort of a language thing that I'm going to put forward as a hypothesis that's going on. Misha, you speak several different languages, correct?
Correct.
Are there any words in the other languages that you speak that is a word for an emotion that doesn't quite exist in the English language?
So the short answer is yes. The long answer won't happen because I can't come up with things on the spot.
That's fine. But what I'm getting at is that
there's lots of language and lots of words, and there's sometimes things just do not match up. Like yeah. I'm with my friend Lolo, who speaks both French, Spanish, English, or like I do. We sometimes go in between the languages because we cannot fully express ourselves in one or the other.
Yeah, and so what I'm trying to get at that is that what maybe someone is feeling as a mixed emotion or an ambivalent emotion might be considered just one thing in a different language, but you don't have the words to really express what's going on. So you're trying to grab at the closest things you can use as a metaphor. So in a coaching space, if it seems like your client is being ambivalent, you might accidentally get into this headspace where like, okay, they're feeling a mix of this emotion and this emotion, or they're this and they're that, and also this, where really that's probably not actually the case. They're experiencing kind of one singular event that doesn't have a word for it, and it's your job as the coach to maybe uncover that and put it into words and an expression that, you know, makes sense for the client.
And it might not even be a word, right? It might, where is it in your body?
Yeah.
Ah,
that's it. Getting away from linguistics. Yeah.
And you know, I saw Jen, you were about to talk a few moments ago, so I just wanted to check in with you and see if there's anything.
Whatever it was, it's totally gone. I was fully listening.
As somebody who has trouble processing emotion in the moment, so I'm somebody who, it's just part of, it's very hard for me to identify how I feel when somebody says, like, puts me on the spot. Like, how are you feeling about it? My first reaction is typically like, I don't know, I won't know, I have no clue. Like, right? I'm not feeling right now, or I can't really understand it. And it's, for me, I almost have to come out of the situation, unless it's very clear, because apparently I knew very much how I was feeling today at the gym. But I think if I come out of what I have to come out of it a lot of times and sort of sit and think about it and process, okay, well, these are the emotions I'm feeling. And I'm bringing this up and I wonder if that's because there's a mix in me, because it's not one thing standing out in that. And so I have to come out of it to sort of process through all the different things before I can really see what it's like. It's like I'm sort of taking all the pieces and laying them out in front of me and then identifying which of them is important.
Yeah.
And if you ask me in the moment and I'm feeling, what might happen is I've learned this right over time, is I might pick something that isn't important really. And because I'm feeling, sort of just blurt it out or say, and that could be something that is hurtful or catastrophic or just not true to me in that moment, right? Especially with PTSD. So like I've had to sort of train myself to come out of it, that, and then sort sift through the feelings to find the ones that are important and the reasons why. Because I think sometimes, I don't know, it might be PTSD, the way I was right, all of these things that come into play. In the moment, I either shut them down completely or I just can't filter through them very well.
I feel like we've been trained to come up with the short answer, right? How are you? I'm fine. Okay, so in coaching, we go further. We say, what does fine mean?
Right? What does fine stand for? Lisa knows.
You're neurotic and emotional.
Yeah. Okay. And so I feel like, you know, when we get trained to answer quickly on the go, which isn't so much happening anymore because we're not as in person and walking down the street, how are you fine? Good luck. I feel like Sue's watching. I feel like it's something that we have to do a retraining individually. And then thank goodness we're coaches so we can ask people and help people go through that process. But I think it's almost like, I feel like going around the room here and asking each of you, how are you? And invite you to come up with something deeper than fine, mm-hmm. more authentic than fine.
I'm down. Let's do it.
I have had somebody ask me that. And I go, are you really asking me? Do you really want to know? Or you just want to just check in, let me know that you want to check in with me, because you know, if I answer you, it's going to take longer than
exactly.
And I've heard people go off in diatribes. There are schools of thought that, like, when somebody, it's a greeting. It's like as much as hello and hello. Mm-hmm. And so you're not, it's rude for you to answer honestly in that situation, mm-hmm. right? Like you're just supposed to say, everything's good. Thank you. Bye. Right.
And there's a phrase, I see you, you know, we keep going, right? But if you really have time and there's really that opportunity to ask how you are and take the answer, then I think that we would be able to retrain how we respond. But we don't always have to cultivate that safety and trust in a cross-by conversation.
I think we would all very carefully ask that question too.
Sometimes our intention is really to ask that question. It's just to say, I'm checking in, hi, I'm concerned, you know, see you later.
I care about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. All right. Popping out. Thanks, everybody.
Hi, Misha.
So yeah, I think that mixed emotion concept visits often for different things. And I think the intensity of it can be for different reasons. One of the things that came up for me on that concept was with my daughter who had a baby and lives out of state. Talk about being excited and happy. And then the flip side, I had to leave and come back to Colorado versus Washington. And, you know, I'm so over the moon that we have a new grandbaby. I'm so sad, and I'm ready to cry now. So sad that I don't get to see her and be, you know, I get pictures, I get videos, and it's not the same.
You know what's fun? I have, well, with my brother, like I love my little brother so much, and he lives in Texas. Mm-hmm. And it's like I almost have to prepare myself. I'm going to cry. Prepare. When I visit him, I have to almost prepare myself for that moment when I leave. Like, because it breaks my heart to leave. Like, I'm so excited to see him that I get sad. I mean, I cried the whole car ride to the airport, the whole plane. Yes, Anthony's like, yes, she did. I cried and cried and cried. And it's just because that's my piece of my heart, right? So it's hard to leave it. It really is. But it's almost like I have to prepare myself too, like to go there, like knowing, oh, it's going to suck to leave. Yeah. But I want to see you and it's totally worth it, but it's going to suck to leave. oh, I may not ask how they are doing anymore. So it's fine.
So that question though, how are you? This is such an interesting topic that actually comes up for me with clients and coaching. You know, do I answer honestly? Do people really want to know? I mean, I've heard that. and I don't know, right? I don't give advice, obviously. All I can say is that for me, I reflected on how I would answer when people would ask me how I was. Mm-hmm. And I decided that I would answer no matter what with gratitude involved in it. That is the energy that I wanted to put out into the world. And I can always find something to be grateful for. So even if I'm having a bad day, I can still respond authentically because there will be gratitude involved. And so I don't know. That's so far what seems to feel really good to me. What about you guys?
By the way, Jen, that's awesome. Like living your best life, being grateful, raising your happiness, your baseline of happiness. That's badass right there. So much respect.
Let me tell you the opposite of reaction that I had. The how are you question, I don't really think about it too much, but there was a time when I worked at Amazon where my area manager would come up and like, hey, like, how's it going? Like, how are you? And like, immediately suspicion, red flags, like, let's just pretend, stop pretending. You really give it S-H-I-T. Just get to the meat of what you want to talk about.
Because it's you guys will say the F word, but you won't say the S word?
Yeah, I know.
All right. It really depends. We like to pick and choose.
Yeah.
I'm kind of lost the story, but go ahead, Anthony.
I'm saving it for a good day. But anyways, it sort of like threw up like, okay, let's just stop pretending and get to what you really want to talk about, because it's definitely not about how I feel.
But that was because the authenticity of the question. He really didn't, like, it really depends on who's asking.
Right? And most of the time, I think it's energy. Just...
There's an energy behind how they ask, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think most of the time, though, I just treat it as like a standard English greeting where people from, I've read this, not experienced it, but people from Germany will be puzzled and then actually tell you how they are in greater detail than you were probably wanting. So there's some cultural differences.
What's funny, too, is it almost worries me. One of the things discussed is like practicing the act of actually practicing ambivalence and how it can lead to happiness and how it can, it's sort of like anti-fragile. It's sort of a similar practicing ambivalence, not exactly the same, but they sort of can work well with one another. Because if I find somebody that, and this is going to sound a little, I guess, cynical, but if I met somebody that was, you know, over the moon positive about everything, or even just one thing, and just had, there was no downside whatsoever. Two things happen inside me. I go, man, they're going to be really disappointed one day. Or I go, I don't trust it because, you know, as a human being in life, I don't know that there is something that is just 1000% amazing. And I feel like it's one of those things where if we think something is going to be something, one thing, it's going to be perfect, right? This is going to be perfect. It feels like we're setting ourselves up for disappointment. Like it feels, if I'm thinking anything, one thing, job, person, situation, relationship is perfect, I feel like I am not living in reality. So I think having practicing that ambivalence and being willing to explore the wholeness of any situation and not just see it for one thing is a much safer way to go about the world in the sense that you're not setting yourself up for disappointment everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I mean, maybe I'm wrong there. What are your thoughts?
Jerome hasn't spoken, so maybe we should give him a voice before I start stepping in there.
I was just going to say, I think it's a very human way of looking at things because we do have so many emotions and they can be difficult to kind of manage at times. To put yourself in a headspace where you expect yourself to come out of a situation feeling one particular emotion, I think that's both dangerous, like you were mentioning, Brooke, and also not very human. It's pretty robotic. There's going to be, I think, multiple emotions that can arise from a particular scenario. And I think as we've been kind of discussing throughout this live stream, it's really how you manage those emotions together that I think make us human and make our emotions real. If that makes, I really think multiple emotions at once really, and Lisa even brought it up in the chat earlier, it's yin and yang ish, where they kind of work together to make each emotion real. They play off of each other to make them real to us and real to the scenario that we're in.
I think too, that if we, oh, I got dogs barking now. If we strive for perfection, then there's no room for growth. And you know, as much as I can grumble through my growth spurts, as it were, I need them. I want to grow and change. I don't want to be the same. I don't want to be perfect. I want to continue to evolve. Sorry, I got distracted with the chat here.
Sorry, you had stick figures pop up. I'm like, who is that?
I also think a word is coming to mind was we're talking about this mixed emotion kind of thing, and that's acceptance. I feel like if you are practicing ambivalence, you also kind of have to be practicing acceptance. Like it is, they're sort of similar. Like I'm going into this and I'm going to accept what happens. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be capable of handling it. I'm going to, you know what I mean? I think even too, like if we're looking at it as people, right? I think we all know we love people, but people are people. So we are not always at our best. And so there's going to be moments where there's friction, right? Mm-hmm. And then, but if you understand that, see people as whole people and see that they're going to experience a whole bunch of emotions or they're going to be who they are. And that's not always going to go how you want it to. And we have that acceptance and you know, that I think there's a tremendous amount of power that comes there.
But I think that takes time. I don't think when you experience that necessarily on the first go, are you going to be in that space? So time and growth and yes, through acceptance. Oh, and trust that there is another side, not that it's just that is the end all be all place.
So bringing it back to coaching, if we have a client that comes in, right, and I know it is not our job to ever say no. You're like, if our clients, their dream is to jump off a cliff, do so safely, right? Or base jumping, like one of the most dangerous things on the planet, but they want to be a base jumper, right? Like inside, I'm like, oh, God, it's so dangerous and terrible. What are you doing? Don't do it. Like cave diving. You're going to drown. Like all these things go through. But is it our job as a coach to prepare our clients with the whole picture? If they are idealizing, if they're coming in and seeing things in a space that is idealistic, is singly dimensional. Is it our job to ask questions that might bring up mixed emotions for our clients?
Yes and no.
Right. We're ambivalent about this one.
Yeah. So there's a reason they're bringing it up in the first place. If they weren't in the ambivalent place, if they weren't already in the mixed emotion space, they would have already made a decision and it wouldn't be brought up. So it's the yes because they're bringing it up because they want to think differently, not differently. They want to have the challenge of what are the things that they're not thinking about. I don't know anything about bungee jumping, but bungee jumping, you know, what are the things that we have to make sure that it's tied really tight, and that we're spotted, that we're, I mean, whatever things go along with that concept, that with care and concern of following through with what that goal is. So in essence, they are bringing it to us for us to challenge them. But we're not, and I say no, because it is a It is a mistake, that's not the word I'm looking for, but I'm going to stick with mistake at the moment. It's a mistake for us to think that it's our, what we understand it to be is what we need to make them understand it to be. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense. And that sort of brought up, so that brought up something that was resonating or stewing in me, which is I could see a situation where we have a personal experience. We see a client careening in a direction and we would have an urge as a coach to bring an awareness. But it may not be our place to do that unless the client brings us there. Right. It's not our job to say, but it's this. Okay. So this is a weird space and I'm trying to articulate my thoughts here. So I'm thinking of a place. So you had said that the client wouldn't bring it up if there wasn't always already a question, but I can see a couple places where it might come up organically. So if we have a client that's working towards a goal, and they don't, it goes south, right? So we're assuming that they're thinking positive things, but it goes south. And now they are in a space of failure. Can't happen. Not gonna happen. Not being ambivalent, right? Now they are like, it's over. Moving on. Mm-hmm. It's never going to happen. Is it our job as a coach to ask more questions around them giving up on that goal?
I'd clarify because it's not entirely clear to me as a coach whether it's done in this instance, like the moment has passed, and another moment like that can never come up again, or if it's something that they could do it again in the future, they could make an attempt, they just don't have the energy to, or they have a bunch of blocks or feeling down about it. I'd mostly kind of try to question what do they mean by failure and how, you know, set are they on this failure?
It could be a coachable moment. Because if it's an experience pattern, you know, that's what we could speak into of the patterns. Is it the place where the client wants to in that moment? They may not want to. They may want. I mean, who knows in that moment? But if it's a pattern, it's going to revisit. And so when we are that coach, we can recognize that. And because it's part of our sessions, pull forward, you know, you had set this up for yourself in one other occasion that I'm aware of. And because it didn't go according to plan, you 86 did. Now you're sharing with me this plan that you're talking about, and it's not going according to plan, and you're ready to 86 it. How does that help you in this moment? How does it help you grow? I mean, I don't know.
I'm noticing a pattern where you start working on something. This I think can come up with, sometimes coaches feel like you have a non-linear client, like they're all over the place. And it's like, they're jumping from one thing to the next. And they're like, oh no, I'm not doing that anymore. I want to do this. You know what I mean? And they're not staying on task.
Yeah.
And they appear to be fine with it. Right. But we might as a coach, maybe this is a challenge moment. This is when we'll bring up mixed emotions. We will say, I'm noticing a pattern. I'm noticing you start working on something and then quit. Start working on something and then quit. Start working on something. Something it gets hard, quit. That's going to bring up mixed emotions in our client, right? Because they're going to feel like, no, this is what I want. Okay, wait. Shit. It caught me. Or they might have a, oh my gosh, I do that. And then, oh, wow, we talk about mixed emotions. So
yeah,
we may induce some mixed emotions in those more challenging moments.
Mm-hmm. Right? We could also get to mixed emotions with them if we ask how they feel about, so the client who's giving up on something, well, how do you feel about that? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I feel okay, but there's also a part of me that, you know, kind of wishes I could follow through. There's the ambivalence piece. That's where the coaching is yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about that piece of you that wishes you could follow through. Like, that's where the
work that's is. Where work, right? Yeah, right. Also, I think, I mean, we can all have a big attest to this. A lot of clients come in wanting something and not knowing how to get it. And I think it a lot of times comes down to them feeling like they don't know how to, or they aren't good enough to, or they don't have the tools to, or there's an insecurity that sort of accompanies mm-hmm. them. And I think insecurity as a whole is a lot of mixed emotions. Like, I think that insecurity isn't like, it's like a whole bunch of mixed emotion, because it comes from wanting something, feeling like we can be or do something, and then being scared and feeling like we're not good enough. And that, like, that is a ball of mixed emotion. That is by definition. And so again, I think there's so much work that happens when we're in these mixed emotion spaces.
I think too, I don't think it always needs to be in an insecure place of someone with an ambivalent, someone that, you know, needs to brainstorm a couple of ideas to see what direction they want to go to, isn't necessarily insecure about it. They just need to research more on what they're really wanting to do.
And I'm also thinking of an interesting situation. I had a coaching call with a gentleman years ago, early on in this process of coaching and learning and everything. And he called and he was devastated and needed a coach, wanted to talk to somebody because his wife or girlfriend essentially did not want to be with him anymore. Like, and his life was crumbling before his eyes. It was lots of he is singularly focused. I have to find a way to get her back. I have to. And I asked him questions. I said, will you do a worst case scenario, best case scenario kind of with me, so I can see how this can work out? And so he explained what the best case scenario was for him. And then he explained what the worst case scenario with him was. And I asked him, how could he manage to get through that worst case? Could he see a way? Could he see a world in which he would be okay through that worst case? And it got him to start to explore and think in new ways. Like, it opened up and sort of opened up that mixed emotions box. Mm-hmm. And sort of got him to start to prepare and see that he could actually be okay in the worst case, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, often the worst case does not happen, right? So it was really a big session about him being preparing to deal with many different outcomes and the worst, the best, and everything in between. And it was very powerful. And I think that is in a space of mixed emotion, that worst case, best case. I think when we ask that, that magic wand, and then we bring it, that's sort of inducing, we're using emotions to figure out what people want. I saw also Spork says hello, everybody.
Yeah, my cat's just being real cat-like today.
Very demanding, and that cat was like, you're going to see me right now.
My cat gives me mixed emotions every day.
What other thoughts? We have a few minutes left. Do we have in this mixed emotion space? And have we covered? I feel like I've mixed emotion. have we covered everything? How can coaches utilize this as a tool?
I think hoping that the client comes to you with mixed emotions versus a solid, I mean, it gives an opportunity to really get into there sooner rather than later, but utilizing that mixed emotion, you know, I think we have mixed emotions about a lot of things. At least I do.
I think if we're realistic people, if we're not like, if we are mentally sound, like if we are anybody in their, for the most part, right mind.
Yeah.
Has to have at least a level of subconscious awareness around that things have good and bad, up and down. There's never, it's never, you know, there's, it's, life is multifaceted and multidimensional. And I think you have to be on drugs or in some hardcore denial not to notice that it, you know, it's not all one way or the other, or, you know, it's not one thing.
For some people, it makes them feel more secure for it to be that black and white kind of direction. For me, if it's in a black and white, not always, but more often, I am in that ambivalent state because I weigh things around. I can see on both sides of this or that. And, you know, to me, many things have equal value. And then, you know, what it gives an opportunity to decide what's really important to me, I think.
You said it, Lisa, black and white. I was going to say, I think we've had this conversation before. This reminds me of gray thinking. There's no exact answer to anything. So to expect that, again, like I was saying earlier, I don't think is very human of us to actually go ahead and achieve to. I think it makes things easier to come out of a situation and say, hey, this is how I feel. This is how I feel. But does it? I think it diminishes the reality of the situation a little bit. And I don't think you're being 100% honest with the situation if you're not assessing the fact that there might be more than one thing going on.
I think ambivalence, too, actually helps me hold more empathy. Because I'm able to think a certain way about something, feel a certain way about something, but then also hold space for an understanding of why someone thinks the way they do, feels the way they do. So it's like, it's actually a helpful emotion, I think, ambivalence is that space for dueling ideas, dueling feelings. I mean, I don't know, I think it serves me actually.
I can't believe I've been using it wrong all these years, that word. Oh my gosh.
All three of us, by the way. All three of us.
And I'm as we were sharing, like in this space, I think that in order for me to practice ambivalence, I have to be humble and I have to be willing to be accepting, right? I think the moment I am adamant about something, my ego is coming into play, and that's kind of that's when I feel that ego bubble up. Like when I was mad at the gym today, I was like, I have to understand too that's a big indication that there's something going on in me. There's an ego here. There's something, you know. This is a system that keeps me safe, right? That's what's happening. It's a system that keeps me safe. So then I have to humble myself, and I have to try to like sort of dissect why and what, and then come to a space of, okay, this is it. And if I'm going to keep going and I have to be accepting about things, and I have to be accepting about things about myself and accepting about things about other people. And it can be a very humbling tool to use. And I think when we utilize it as a coach, we have to be humble and curious. And not have the answers and not be adamant and be willing to be ambivalent with our clients and explore and learn. And I think we can also use it as a tool on the flip side and encourage ambivalence in our clients, question around ambivalence around our clients, and find a little confidence in our coaching when our clients are in those I don't know spaces and we don't have all the answers figured out. That's a gift and a moment when you can really crack some things open. So a little where I am at for it on a personal level and also on a coaching level. Anthony, Jerome?
Yeah, we're coming to the end, so I'll just give my final thoughts on it. Is for some reason, I thought of this maybe as like a coaching exercise that could be done if a client is feeling mixed emotions and you're working through that, is asking the client, give that mixture of emotions a name, its own discrete, unique, new name for what it is you're feeling. Because if you can pull apart the pieces, you can try to analyze all the different working parts that are going on as discrete entities, but the client doesn't experience it usually that way. It's a mixture. It's what they are feeling. So lean into that. You know, that's kind of my final thought on that. Jerome, Jen.
Before you guys answer, really quick, there's an odd question in the chat, and it says, I'm curious if you've leveraged family internal or internal family systems for multitude of emotions. And quickly to address that, as soon as I read that, that to me is a sort of a therapy space that we're delving into with that. It's a why. It's a why are you feeling this way? And as coaches, we're not going to ask our clients. I mean, we might, why are you feeling, but we don't really delve there. It's really about what are you feeling? What are we going to do? Why is that relevant? How do we move forward? And so it's these forward, we're not sort of meddling in.
It's psychoanalytic practice.
Yeah, and that's
where
not
if you're not trained to do that, I would advise as a coach not really to go into that territory.
Just wanted to quickly address that question. Jerome?
I was going to say that I think I already gave a bit of my final thoughts, but I'll go ahead and cap it off with one final thought. I do think that we do all have torn feelings. And really, ultimately, I think that's just something that is, for you, a good indicator. It's a good litmus test that you are, you're human, like Brooke was saying, unless you're on drugs or, you know, kind of very, you know, just kind of. Or a psychopath, I think you're going to be dealing with mixed emotions for the entirety of your life. So I think find comfort in that. Understand it's a human way of life to kind of mule over multiple feelings at once. So being torn isn't something that you should feel bad about. Something you should find comfort in. Always not easy to deal with, I'm sure. But at the end of the day, I think it's nice to remind yourself that this is just a human emotion that you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. And to just add directly to that, Jerome, because that was great. I wonder sometimes if it's our desire to only hold one emotion that is actually what is so uncomfortable about holding more than one emotion. So being ambivalent, right? So embracing it as if I have the capacity to hold more than just one emotion. I have the capacity to feel multiple things. I have the capacity to feel conflicting things, and I'm still okay. It's just part of the human experience.
I see that. I'm training in IFS, and I find it helpful to identify that various emotions can have different desired outcomes. And totally agree with that, 100%. And that's where I think sorting through, for me on a personal level, why I lay out all of the emotion when I'm processing my own in front of me, and when I'm not feeling emotion, and I identify which one is important and what my desired outcome is, and what, you know, but I don't know, then I get mixed emotions about having desired outcomes and not going with the flow. So I have to be willing to go with the flow and be accepted. So yeah.
So sometimes with coaching, it doesn't really need any of my input when we're in this space. Sometimes it's just about using the whiteboard and writing down what someone is sharing so that they can do what Brooke self does, figuring out what direction they want to focus in. It might not be the most important one in the moment, but it gives them the space to find their equilibrium as they go towards the one that is even harder to work through. So there's simple ways to interact with your client should something like this come up. And there's more complex partnering that we do and challenging that we do with our clients.
And I love what Green Adventures just said. For me, to leveraging it is separating the various emotions to dig into what I actually want.
Yeah.
Yeah. So true, right? Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, that's about the end of our live. Thank you guys for watching. Thank you for joining in the conversation. And I hope all of you are having wonderful days out there. And check out Certified Life Coach Institute. We certify coaches in 3 days, but we support them for much longer. Also, if you like this, please follow, like, subscribe, and share with anybody who might find it helpful.
What are we doing next month?
Next month is ICF. We dive headfirst into the land of International Coaching Federation, beginning next week with coaching with sponsors. And what does that mean? So lots to unpack there. And we will see you guys next week, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Once again, this is brought to you by Certified Life Coach Institute. We're an ICF-accredited school who certifies our life coaches in 3-day online intensive courses. In addition to other podcast episodes, feel free to check us out every Tuesday at 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time on YouTube or Facebook for our CLCI Lives, where we get together and discuss various topics that are centered around sharpening your skills so you can become a better certified life coach. For more information, feel free to visit us at CertifiedLifeCoachInstitute.com. Until next time, be well.